Welcome, everyone. Ooh, that's loud. A little too loud for this space. My name is Josh Eiler, the director of the Center for Teaching Excellence here at Rice, and welcome to our faculty engagement session on using classroom response systems. Before I introduce our panelists today, I'd just like to thank Jane for organizing this, and our sponsors, Fondren Library, OIT, the CWOBC, and the Center for Teaching Excellence. Classroom response systems, that's kind of an umbrella term that encompasses everything from colored note cards to clickers of all kinds to new websites that offer the ability to turn students' cell phones into clicker-like devices. So these have become very popular over the last decade or so, and we have a number of faculty here at Rice who are experimenting with their use in the classroom. And have invited six, believe Raphael will come by the end of it, have invited six to talk to you a little bit today about their use of classroom response systems in their particular courses. So we asked them five guiding questions. In what class did you use the system, and how many students did you have in that class? In what kind of situations or context did you use it? How did it work for your teaching? Was it helpful, effective, engaging, etc.? How did your students respond to it, and would you use it again or differently? So with that, I'm going to introduce our speakers. First, we have John Greiner, who's a lecturer in computer science. And then we'll move to Robin Sickles, who is the Reginald Henry Hargrove Professor of Economics and also Professor of Statistics. Then we'll move to Fanny Yarbrough, who's Associate Professor of History. Then to Gary Woods, who is a Professor in the Practice of Electrical Engineering. And finally, Rocio Doherty, who is a research scientist in chemical and biomolecular engineering. So please welcome our guests.
So, as he said, I'm John Greiner. So I've used the little clickers that the office provides in two classes so far. Comp 382, a sophomore and junior level course of about 120 students, and a database class of about 60 students, and I'll continue to use that next semester when I teach them again, the senior level and grad level class. As I said, so far I've just used the clickers. In particular, I use it in an anonymous mode where I'm not keeping track of who's clicking them. I just hand out the clickers at the beginning of the class and take them in again at the end of the class. So in how have I used them in particular? So in class, I use them to check and reinforce whatever the contents are. So I'll have anywhere from one to half a dozen little times to vote, times to respond to questions. And I try to make the questions so that they're interesting, that they're not trivial, that it often leads towards class discussion because students might get it wrong and follow up on that. Frequently, it'll be a very variety of difficulty, anywhere from sort of just checking whether they understood definitions to applying algorithms that we covered, as well as how to solve a problem if the answer to these problems are short and I can give a few different answers. How has it worked for me? So it helps keep the students engaged, which is really the primary purpose that I'm using it for, to make sure that they're actually paying attention and able to apply the knowledge that hopefully they're gaining during class. So it's been helpful, and it provides me a way to make sure that people are paying attention and actually getting the material, and it helps the students understand the material, especially when they're answering questions wrong, right? I mean, it makes them say, oh, okay, maybe I didn't understand this after all, let's talk about that. And I get that feedback from the students, not only the immediate feedback of seeing what their answers are, but I also did in-class surveys midway through the class to ask what students thought about various parts of the course, and the various types of active learning that I was using, including the clickers, were highly rated. They were among the best things in the course, the students said. So the downside of it, though, is that it takes time. I mean, it takes time to stop and, you know, pause, explain the question, wait for them to actually respond, because there's going to be about half that respond very quickly and half that kind of drag their feet. And you kind of, I want a reasonable majority to actually respond and participate. I don't want to kind of, I don't want to move on too quickly and encourage students not to participate. So I want to wait for them and get them to actually participate. So that slows things down sometimes, but so I want to make sure that the questions I'm asking are actually worth that time. One other disadvantage of the system that I found, so I'm embedding these questions within PowerPoint, and just the software that comes with the PowerPoint plugin for Turning Point is not the best add-in. It's a little kludgy on the interface. So as I said, students responded to it very favorably overall, as long as the questions were worthwhile. Another thing that I found is I want to make sure that I have at least several questions in any class that I am going to use it. It's kind of just too much trouble if I only have one question during the class to hand the clickers out and get them back. So I'm definitely going to use it again next semester when I repeat my database class. I'm reviewing all the questions, trying to make sure that all of the questions are worthwhile and, you know, that, like I said, I have at least a few questions anytime I'm actually using it. So I guess that's the count.
What do you say? I had some slides, but I'm not sure really it's so practical to go through those. I teach a course in energy econometrics, energy modeling for our master's in energy economics. Program, at least the one that I use the clickers in. And we have 25 students in that class. They're between 25 and 35, they're highly motivated. It's a professional master's arrangement, so they are motivated not only because they're older and looking for a job, of course, the energy market is not as good as it has been, so they're pretty anxious to do well, but they're also paying the way. So having a class like that and a constituency like that is a little different than having undergraduates that very different. And I've found that that kind of technology that engages them in a variety of ways is beneficial. It has, I think, been very useful. I've got several situations that I've used the clickers in. You know, there's a lot in econometrics that at least visually, is pretty close to pattern recognition. We're trying to establish patterns in data. And some of the easiest ways to do that, of course, is to look at data and see whether, you know, lines fit it or, you know, certain cognitive perceptions are consistent with the patterns of the data. Where I have found the clickers to be helpful is in getting the students to respond to questions that are framed in such a way that they would see patterns in data that I've fixed it this way, which in fact are incorrect. Just to get them to recognize that in order to be able to actually understand relationships, you have to think slow as well as fast. And that's one of the first things I talk about in Cameron's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. In some of the settings, I ask them to very quickly respond to a question. You know, you remember the picture of I don't know how it's framed, politically correct, but there is a witch and there is a beautiful.
course, the question is how, what do you perceive in that picture? How do you perceive it to look like? Right? And of course, I want them to give me a quick answer. So they give me a quick answer. I look at the distribution. Of course, it's 50-50. And then I point out what the pictures really are. And of course, the boy sort of said, yeah, I see that now. Well, again, that sort of speaks to recognizing in a deeper way maybe some underlying patterns, some underlying regularities of data that they may not have seen at first blush. And I found that to be very useful, a very useful way to motivate that that idea. You know, data and analysis and understanding the theoretical underpinnings of inference is largely a mental exercise. And so having them actually give me data by essentially responding to a survey question and clicking an answer to that question, and then taking that data and using it in a physical exercise of they give me the data, I enter it and utilize it in some analysis, you know, gives them a bridge between the actual physical part of getting data together and the inferential tools that we develop. So, you know, those are some of the situations that we use them in. It is, I think, very effective. It does engage them. But again, these are highly motivated, highly engaged students to begin with. So it's not clear that at the margin it's doing as much as it might in other settings, but I think it has been helpful. Students do respond to it well. There is the downside, of course, that it takes time. And I have found myself, frankly, this year using it less because of the setup cost and the setup time, which is unfortunate, but that's what I found to be the case. I will continue to use it. I think I will use it differently in the sense that, you know, motivating histograms, which of course is one of the outcomes of this software, you get essentially distributions of responses. And if you've got a finite number of responses, of course you get what essentially is a histogram of the data. What I would like to be able to do, and I know it's feasible to do it, but I just haven't done it yet, is to actually get the information in the form of data, not in the form of just summaries of distributions, but in the form of the original of the data itself, and link that to an Excel spreadsheet, use it in a simple regression setting, so that they are essentially giving the survey data that we're analyzing formally in the econometrics part of the course. That's something I have not done, and in a sense, that answers question five. Would you use it again? How would you use it differently? I would use it in that way. So, that's what I'm saying.
I'm going to set a little timer so that I make sure that I keep it 3 to 5 minutes. Okay, so I used the Turning Technologies clickers, the little calculator looking things, when I teach the first half of the US History Survey. I've used them here, and I've used them at my previous institution, the University of Oklahoma. There I used it with 75 students. Here I used it with 31 students. I used it every class. I used it to do daily readings quizzes. In the larger class, I did it because I wanted to keep students engaged. I wanted to try to encourage them to do the reading because the discussions that you have in class are obviously going to be better if they've actually read. And the way that I prefer to think of incentivizing it was by doing these daily readings quizzes. They varied between 4 and 10 questions, and we did it every class at the beginning of class. They had assigned clickers. It takes a little bit of time to set them up the very first day, but once you set it up once, you can do it all semester long. We had a system. They all need to get them out. They all need to start the class with these clickers. So I used it for that. I used it also because I am a person that likes to take attendance, and it can take attendance for you by virtue of did they respond to any of the questions on the quiz. I also used it for opinion polling. So sometimes I would set the students up to debate an issue, for instance, Indian removal, and then they would be in teams, they would present their arguments, and then their classmates would vote on who had presented the best argument. Right, and so that I found to be a really useful way to engage them in a different activity. I also use the polling sometimes to test if they knew about a topic before we talked about it, or what their misconceptions might be, so that we could address them directly. The other way that I used the quizzes was that sometimes I built our lecture around the quiz. So sometimes I would have quiz questions in which many answers were right or none of the answers were right, and then we would stop and talk about each of the answers on the quiz, and so that was the structure, the bones for the lecture that day. I found them to be really useful. The biggest thing that I found useful about the quizzes for me in terms of pedagogy was that if there was a problem, I could fix it right then. You can do readings quizzes on paper, right? You can then check them after class, then you know that there was some kind of problem. I had my polling set up so that the results would show automatically. I also timed the quizzes so that there was a little clock at the bottom so that people who wanted to drag their feet couldn't, right? So, you know, 45 seconds or a minute or 30 seconds, depending on the kind of question. And then if I saw that 75% of the class got a question wrong, we could stop and say, okay, what happened? And what was really interesting is that sometimes the students would answer the question for themselves, right? So sometimes the students would say, oh, someone who had gotten it right would say, I see what they did. They didn't read this part of the chapter that said X. Or, I think you misunderstood Y. So I thought that was really useful because it got the students engaged with each other. Sometimes they would, many students would get an answer wrong, and I would let them argue for why they thought my answer was wrong or why I should accept their answer. And if they could come up with a good reason, good logic for why I should accept their answer, then I would add that to the roster of correct answers that day. And because it was all computerized, I could just go back in after class and change a response to add a correct response if I wanted to do that, or to throw out a question entirely. So I thought it was really useful because I could engage this misinformation quickly and because they sometimes were educating each other. For the most part, the students responded pretty positively to it. I think it probably works better in a larger class. There can be some resentment about the quizzes, right? As one student said to me this semester, it's like you expect us to read everything and know the material really well. And I said, yes, in fact, that is what I want you to do. But that can cause some tension for some students. For other students, I also found it really useful because you always have some students that are really quiet and you don't really know what they're thinking or imagining or doing, and I would discover some really quiet students who were just killing it on these quizzes, who were just clearly had done all the reading and were thinking very carefully and all of that. And so this was a way to reward those kids who didn't want to talk in class because I get participation points, but they could still earn points for having done the reading. I have had colleagues who used this system at the University of Houston, and they reported that when they looked at the numbers, classes that used clickers had lower rates of D's, F's, and withdrawals, and had higher student evaluations. I've only done it with one class here, so I can't speak to that, but this is something they found when they did it across the US history surveys at U of H. So finally, I would use these again. I think I might have to rethink the frequency of my quizzes, just because I did get some pushback from the students who said, it's like a test every class. Yes, it is like a test every class. So I think I would rethink that, but thus far I found them to be really useful in a variety of ways, and that you can be creative about how you want them to be useful for you.
So I had some slides, but it was mostly just bullet points, so I think I'll just hit the highlights here for you. I used clickers in my device physics class. This is a sophomore junior level class in electrical engineering. There's about 40 students in the class. It's a required class, and most of the students don't like it. The material, it's basically the physics of how transistors work inside integrated circuits. And even among people who've chosen electrical engineering, this is not why they went into electrical engineering, to understand how the ICs work. They want to just use them and build the amazing things with them. But nobody wants, I mean, there's a subset, but 10-20% of the students really are interested in the device building, so who We've got to make them take it, but it's for many people, it's kind of a chore. So anyway, one comment I pulled off the bells, this is pretty typical of what I get every semester, every year. And it says, quote, "I hate the material, but Woods makes it a good course. Happy to be done with physical electronics." So that's kind of what I'm up against. I'm tasked with teaching a course that most of the students, that's kind of how they feel. So I'm always trying to make it interesting, trying to do something to sort of mix it up and make them see why I find it interesting when I've chosen to do this in my career. And hopefully they can appreciate it. So anyway, I do some things. I do a video project that Jane has been helping my students with every year. I'll give you the URL. You should check it out on YouTube. There were some amazing videos last year. There was a real great rap battle one that somebody made. Not safe for work and everything. It was perfect. But anyway, for the first time, last year I used Classroom Clickers. And so I would say, I used it, I think the way John was saying, I just used it in anonymous polling mode. The receiver was installed on the Mac in the classroom, and the way that they recommend to set it up is you install the little widget on your own laptop computer, embed the questions within your PowerPoint, present from your PowerPoint, and so on. But what I found instead, because I don't use the projector in my classroom, I actually just print out my slides on paper and hand them out so students can get notes. But I don't actually use the screen. So what I did instead is I just gave the hard copy slides, and then I asked snap questions that they can use the clickers to respond to, and the map on the podium tabulates the answers, but I don't bother projecting it on the screen. I just kind of tell them the results as they're coming in. So that worked pretty well. That was a good compromise for me, I think, given how I like to present to the classroom. So what I used to do, the situations when I use the clickers, my usual approach is what I call small group questions. I'll stop the lecture, pause, I'll pose a question, and I'll have the students, rather than give individual answers, I'll say, turn to your two or three neighbors and ask and discuss among yourselves what's the answer to this question. And then I'll call on a group randomly. With clickers, I do it a little bit differently, but almost the same. I basically build in a question into the notes, sometimes into the hard copy notes I handed out. Often I'll just ask a snap question. So like as I'm lecturing and I see a bunch of blank stares or something like that, I will pause and say, okay, what do you think about this? And I'll make up some question and make up some multiple choice answers for it and write the answers on the board and then ask them to respond to the poll. And I'll wait until maybe 80% of the students have responded or something like that. And sometimes it's surprising. Sometimes I'm asking what I think is an easy question, and you know, sure enough, fewer than half the students get it right or something. So it's been good feedback for me to help make sure that they are kind of learning the material. I would say overall it was somewhat effective. Often the way I like to teach the material, it's hard to generate multiple choice questions. Like I'd like to ask them to calculate an answer or something, and so how far off do I make the answers? You know, do I make the four choices off by 20% from each other, off by orders of magnitude, so there's a bit of ambiguity there how to use it. And I would say I didn't use it every lecture. Maybe once or twice a week I would incorporate it into my lectures. So I would say they were used somewhat effectively. I went through the course evals. There was only one student mentioned anything about the clickers and the course evals, and I'll read from what he said. "I personally think the clickers are not the way to go. I'd actually suggest we just do more practice problems in class." He's the only one who provided feedback on that. But nonetheless, my plan is to try it again. I think my main issue is I want to get the students more involved and engage with the material. So one of the things I want to do is try to use the clickers again and use them better next time. One of the reasons I came here is to find out what other people have for suggestions in that regard. I also want to try some other things, like doing more live demos in the classroom and try more of these small group questions, as I mentioned. But I'm open to other ideas in that regard. That's been my experience with clickers.
Hello everyone, I'm Dr. Ogilvie. I'm in the Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering Department, and specifically teach Chemical Engineering from the method. I'm not the main professor, I just jump when my main professor needs help. So last year he was on paternity leave, so I jumped and I did the full semester. And I tried the clinker, the system a lot, in two ways. The first way was I mean with my colleagues just to test if the students are really getting the concepts. This is, my class is the first chemical engineering class that the students have in their lives. And at this point, I think they start the semester still with a high school mentality when they saw organic chemistry or physics, I don't know, in a very, in a different state of mind. And in my class, that's, this is the breaking point where they have to change the speed of thinking, change the state of mind, and also when they have to learn a lot of new concepts very quickly. Very quickly, because it's a class packed with material. So one of the uses I did for the clickers was just to test if the guys were getting the concept in the way they want. So I explain something, I ask a question about where the concept was involved, and just check if everybody got it or not. Quick. If the majority failed the question, then I explain again, maybe in a different way. And if the majority was right, I just move forward, because once again, it's a class full of new concepts, and the material is really bad. This was one of the uses, but the one that I liked the most was a little contest I did before every midterm exam. I had three midterm exams. Because this is a contest, and this is going to test the speed and the exactitude that the students think. I truly believe that we, as professors, we gotta teach concepts, we gotta teach science or whatever our area is, but also we gotta teach skills, and we gotta teach attitudes, etc. No? When they complain about how fast they have to respond to this contest, I say, well, sometimes when you are in the industry, you have to think that fast and make a good decision that fast. It's a matter of seconds for something that to happen. No? There were a lot of complaints about, I'm so stressed that I pushed the wrong button. Yeah, I agree, but if you are outside and you have a bomb or you have something and you push the right button, something bad is going to happen. So you really have to learn how to manage that stress, how to think fast, and how to be confident with your answer. No? There was no bad points or not punishment for the people that didn't answer correctly or on time, but there were rewards for the people that didn't. So I just, I assigned the clickers also at the beginning of the year, so I knew who was the winner or who answered the person correctly. And I gave something like 10 points over the exam to the 5 first people or something like that. Another response were, then I asked them, what do you think about the clickers, just in person? And some of them were like, that's okay. Okay. Some of them were like, oh, it's so stressing. And some of them were like, it's so stressing. You have everything, but the thing I think the last time I did it, most of them were really excited, especially because they knew that those points were really valuable in their grade. No? What else? And well, that was maybe the uses. I also like to take attendance, because especially around the midterm time, you can see more empty seats. And so it was also my way to take attendance, and they say, well, at the end of the year, when they say, I got an A, but I want my A+. How? You didn't come. You know? And I forgot, I had around 85 students divided into groups, but that was, especially taking attendance, for example, if I just start going and calling their names, it's gonna take me 5, 6, 10 minutes to do it, and I don't have that time. So it's a way to manage the groups in a very efficient way to manage the groups. Just to test if they understood everything, to test if, to know if all of them are there, and some other things, some other skills.
Okay. We have some time for Q&A now. I'll kick it off with two tiny questions. One for you, Faye. Do you use the reading quizzes only for attendance, or do you grade them in their own right?
Oh, no, they get points.
Okay.
Yeah, they so what I, so this is another thing to think about. If you're going to do, oh, I'm sorry. If you're going to, so I did daily readings quizzes, and part of the pushback, I think, from some of the students was there was no makeup for the readings quizzes, right? Because you've got to be there with the clickers, and I tell you the answer after each question, right? And so some, if you have a large number of students who are going to miss a lot of class for whatever reason, then they're going to complain about the inability to make up those points. So it's funny because the quizzes didn't count for much of their grade. But for some reason, their perception was that it was outsized, right? So they had the perception that it counted for a lot of their grade, when in actuality, even though I laid it all out in the syllabus, it accounted for a pretty small part of their grade. They took them quite seriously. And I then, because of, to account for the fact that I didn't offer a chance to make those up, because it's all done on, you might have gathered that I'm not good with technology. So because the magic happens inside of the computer, it's pretty easy to go in and adjust. So I just went in and adjusted everybody and basically threw out like 4 quizzes over the course of the semester so that it, you know, wouldn't count against you. And then what I did was the students who were there all the time and who earned more points possible, then right after I readjusted, I just gave them those points, right? So that the you benefited from having come all the time and performing well on the quizzes. But I absolutely made them count for part of their grade, a much smaller portion than the students understood. But I liked that they took the quiz really seriously, so.
Okay, great. And did all of you use Turning Point, or did anyone use another clicker?
Turning Point.
Turning Point? Oh. Right. Other questions?
First, a comment on what you just said. I used the quiz at the beginning of my lectures, which is just one class a week. But yeah, people take it really seriously, even though it's just like 2 points. And I've had everyone show up every day, you know, which wouldn't have happened in the past. They would have been dropping off at midterm, but. I have 28 students, they're always there. If they're not gonna be there, they email me, tell me why they can't make it, and I let them drop 2 of the quizzes too, so that's a way to get around that. But so the question I had for John and Robin, I guess you're all doing multiple choice questions for all of these questions in order to get the response. So it seems kind of hard for you. I mean, how do you come up with the alternative that's like a plausible alternative number or answer or, you know, something? And is it possible to do anything other than multiple choice, I guess?
So there are other options, but I only use multiple choice in there. And yeah, so sometimes I just can't come up with a question on some material because I can't think of how to present it as a multiple choice question. Other times I try to come up with plausible alternatives that, you know, If they misunderstand it this way, then here's the answer. If they misunderstand it this way, here's the answer. Or I don't have, in the classes I've been doing, it hasn't been too much simple calculational errors and things. It's more misunderstandings of different options.
Does that
There is a way to accept also numerical answers, but there is something with the license.
There is something with the license here in the university that only multiple choice and true and false are working. But the way I used to do it is just, of course, the right answer, and then just calculate or do the mistakes that they could have done during the process. And for example, they multiplied instead of dividing something. And the answer that I got by doing that, that was one of the answers. And something that I noticed is that if you have only four choices, it's very easy. Just not easy, but it's 25% chances of them having the right answer. So I did like 10. Well, yeah, so they had to push really, really the right button to get the correct answer.
So just to respond to your question, which was asked to both of us, it does require a little bit of effort to come up with framing a question in a way that can be responded to by clicking, what is it, Jane, one, A through G?
There are ten
options. Now, you know, I was just going through some of the slides that I put together. So one of the questions that I asked students, just to get a sense of their sense of income levels, you know, I could ask questions about what are their aspirations in terms of income, or are they comfortable with the income that they're making? And so one of the questions that I had asked in terms of just survey information, you know, you've got the labor scale, but you've also got other options. So I'm comfortable with the level of income that I'm currently making, strongly agree, somewhat neutral, somewhat disagree, very strongly disagree. You know, I can put income levels in there as well, just, you know, like census groups. A lot of times I ask questions that spoke to gender differences or spoke to choices in a treatment model where people selected into certain outcomes but didn't do it in a randomized fashion. So I could show them the fallacy of just looking at simple outcomes in two different groups and ignoring the potential of this selectivity in a treatment model. I could do that really simply because a lot of that is really categorical outcomes, right? So I'd have to focus the question really on income groups or price groups. Of course, this is econometrics and oil price groups. Or demographic characteristics. But you know, to be frank, it was not that difficult to do that in a measurement kind of course like this is. Preference, you know, of course, then there's what Fred was talking about and others, of course, and that's, you know, you pose certain questions, and, you know, the way you frame them, of course, is that one's right and one's wrong. Or you make a statement and is this a reasonable thing to say? You know, and immediately you can ask their response, and they'll give it to you. And then, of course, you get the sense of really whether they're in the game or not. You know, if they don't have a clue, you know, which oftentimes they don't, and you think they do, then it's immediate feedback. It's very, very important.
Actually, I'll follow up on one more thing. One thing I found useful in at least some situations is, well, you can have multiple correct answers as well. And that often throws the students off, right? They think, oh, there's only one way to do anything, or there must be only one answer correct. And so if you see in the responses, hey, there's actually, you know, most people are saying these two answers, you know, it's a good chance to ask them, well, is there something wrong going on here? Do you believe these other guys? Do you believe this other answer? And you can get a discussion. Even though they're all right, they need to actually realize that the other answer was also right.
Another poll everywhere, iClicker, Top Hat, and Soccer2 allow for free response. Are there others?
Well, so Turning Point Cloud, which is what Dr. Mark is using. You can use your device, your laptop, your mobile device, and that allows for free response.
Thanks.
This question is, I'll direct it to Faye, but welcome anybody to answer. When the students take a quiz and it's automatically graded, is that already integrated into the Canvas format?
Oh gosh, I could not tell you. So Turning Point is allegedly working with some of the course management systems, but I don't know if, so again, because I'm a little bit frightened by technology, I don't trust it to put my grades into the, I don't trust it to do it, and in fact, I, after class, every time would resave, so I had for every class of the semester saved the data over and over and over again with then a new layer for the new day, because I could have waited till the end of the semester to do it, but I was so frightened that something was going to happen. So I'm also not someone who would put my grades on ALSpace or anything else or any other Blackboard. I've never done that because I'm too anxious. But they I know, but they recognize that that's what faculty want. I can't tell you if they do it with Canvas or not. I don't, maybe.
Turning Point has a full message.
Well, let me ask one more thing and then I'll pass this back. Is, can you, kind of walk us through how you would start a class that has a quiz in terms of where are the questions up on the screen, a certain number of time that you give, and then as you're clicking.
So I would, so mine were embedded into the PowerPoints, right? And so we would come to class, and in both of these classes I had a TA. So at OU, we're very fortunate at Rice. Rice buys the clickers and provides them in class. At OU, the students had to pay for them themselves. So, yeah, so there was an added element of, and they have to pay for that. they have to pay for their own torture device. So here, at OU, they just all got them out of their bags. Here, I had a box, and I had put little stickers on the back of all of them and labeled them by number, so that students knew what their number was after we set them up the first week of class. And so at the beginning of class, I would put the box on the table and the students would come and get their clickers and sit down. And then they would turn them in by row so that we could keep them segregated by row. I don't think anybody else was using them because they usually stay in the same order. And then it's useful for me because then at the beginning of class, I could just say, all right, everybody, are you ready with your clickers for class now? And so I would have a slide just for the day. And then each question is its own slide. And so I would put the slide up, and then initially I didn't have a timer, and they would take forever to answer these questions, I think to delay getting to lecture. So I then put a timer at the bottom that would start, and I set it so that it wouldn't show how the students were responding until I closed the polling, and then once I, but you can have it track them if you want. So then I would close the polling, and then the answers would show up. And then it was really interesting how competitive they were, right? You said D, I'm sure that's wrong, but why does that say that D is right, right? And so it was really, you know, where they would, oh, yay, you know, when they saw what the answers were. So I would have the polling show up, and then I would actually have a separate thing come out and show them which one was right. Because sometimes the majority of the class did not pick the right thing. So that's what we would do. So it would take maybe, depending on how many questions, I would give them, for true-false questions, like 30 seconds to answer. For longer questions, 45, at the most, a minute. And the most, for me, I found that 10 questions was too much, and I needed to stay around 8, but some classes I just had 4 or 5.
Other questions?
I have one question about the physicality of the clicker. Because you mentioned that there are products that will go in through like their phone or laptop or whatnot, versus there's a certain physicality of the clicker. And I was just wondering your feel about how important that was as opposed to something else where you may say going through your phone or your laptop or something like that.
I thought that, I mentioned this when I was talking about sort of answering these questions, I thought that the physicality of the clicker, the fact that they were engaged in a physical act of registering information that was then used in a virtual computational algorithm was a very important intellectual link was talking about was more in terms of just learning and understanding the linkages that go into empirical findings. Just in terms of literally the feel of it, I mean, it's fairly, you know, it's a completely you know, mindless, simple thing to push buttons on. It's small, it's compact, it's very easy to see what, whether it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, or I.
Right. Yeah, because there's also this sort of, and then like John is with an anonymous mode, right? There's an anonymity to it. Well, you know, because I always wonder with, is your, you know, psychologically a difference in, say, if you're using on your phone where it's logged in and say integrated with Canvas or something like that, where it's clearly you, right? Versus this physical thing which you're just going to push in a button.
Well, I always used it on an anonymous, I did not have
a link to find it. I'm going to answer your question a little bit differently. So I had them using the clickers and not their cell phones or anything for two reasons. One is I didn't want to give them an excuse to have their cell phones out. And secondly, I didn't want to go through any hassle of everybody needing to set up their cell phones and making sure that it would work appropriately. It was handing out the clickers was easy. It's not going to break.
Right, but you're then restricted to a room that has the clickers.
Right. But you just arrange with, you know, arrange with them to have the box of clickers in the room and it's there.
And the software on the machine.
Right.
I personally don't like the students to have their cell phone in front of them. In front of them during the class, because it just makes me mad to see the students like, So I'd rather have the little clicker, which I think they're very practical. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, it is amazing because they know, you know who they are even with the clickers, if you assign the numbers, but just the fact that they are not exposed to the public right there, changes everything. They know who they are, they know you know who they are, but it's a different attitude that they have to answer right there in front of everyone. They are more participative.
I have a quick question. So I can see that most of you are using a clicker to test their knowledge in a content course or a survey course. And I'm wondering if you think that there are any possibilities to sort of flip the assignment in which students are asked to design questions for the poll as a means of gauging their knowledge of a particular subject. Or if they were running a class, for example, a group was running class for the day, could they design a poll that would then be, that you could evaluate as a measure of their knowledge of that subject?
Are you asking whether it would be easier to do that with Turning Point and clickers than it would be in any other set?
No, I'm just asking if it would be possible for the students to design, if that could be an assignment that you gave to them, to design a series of questions for their classmates to answer.
You can do anything.
I never saw that, but it is kind of like me, I think.
I don't see that to be necessarily unique to the clickers. That's, I guess, what I'm saying. And that's a generic question about how you might engage the students in developing questions in general.
It sounds as though the kinds of questions you have to develop for the clicker have to be carefully thought out. What is a good question? What kinds of responses might be reasonable? What kinds of interpretations might people have that lend themselves to this kind of modality?
Well, there are multiple, essentially multiple choice questions. So to the extent that you design multiple choice questions, or you, if you want to use it for an examination setting, then it would be no different than putting those multiple choice questions together in an exam. That's all I'm trying to say.
I guess I was thinking more of what Faye was talking about when you get to questions that are more interpretive, where there could be more than one right answer, or there could be a debate about the.
Then, of course, A and B are okay.
Yeah.
You know,
Is the turning point software easy enough to use that, say, you're in the middle of class and you've got a bunch of people arguing over something, that you could put together a question right then and there during class and say, okay, let's take a vote, right? How many people want to go this way? How many people want to go that way, right?
That would be easy to do.
Could you do that? I don't know. I've not seen the software. So
that would be easy to do.
Graduate student, and one of our professors uses a different software but does similar things. And so one of our homework assignments was always to turn in questions that he would then use, the ones that he liked. So beforehand, we would turn in questions, and then he used those questions and then throws in questions that he also wanted. But that way, the professor's not on making all of the questions. It was a great reading check beforehand. But additionally, the one that he uses is one that he actually made, but has a stop, slow down, and speed up function too, that's constantly at any point in time you can log in and be like, stop, I have no idea what's going on anymore. And if you saw enough of those big, and he had a design so that it was red, if you saw enough of those reds pop up, it was like something has gone drastically wrong, no one knows what's happening anymore. Whereas if everything continued being at the green, it was like, okay, we understand the content. And it, both of those things were helpful. So the coming up with the questions and also answering questions that you know that your classmates had made as well as yourself. Was kind of fun, and then the function of being able to slow down class or be like, I'm good, I understand this concept, was helpful for making sure that we didn't go a long ways without actually understanding the content. So I think that kind of answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, one last question before we finish. Most of the studies on classroom response systems focus a lot on what the students are doing. What are the answers? How do those answers lead to subsequent answers? Like that. And then they all have this moment where they say, and then the teacher explains something. But to me, that glosses over the most important part and one of the most effective uses of classroom response systems. So my question is, when you put a question up on the screen and a misconception is revealed or a significant percentage of students get it wrong, what do you do next? How do you address that wrong answer or that misconception at that moment in the classroom?
I use it as a way to anticipate new material. So I have a particular set of questions asked about a particular phenomenon in analysis. And I'll have, well, is it this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, or all? And, you know, the answers are all over the place. And of course, it's all over. And I say, you're all right, but you're all wrong. And that's what we're going to talk about next class.
Okay.
So it gives them, I think, a sense that, you know, they're right, but it's not complete.
Yeah.
So that's one way.
Great.
Well, and I would say it somewhat depends upon, there's questions that I anticipate them to mostly get it right, and it's largely a check. And if they're getting it wrong, then it says, oh, okay, I need to stop, re-explain the concept some other way. And then there's other problems where I'm anticipating them to get it wrong. It's set up as, oh, I think you're, I'm taking you down the garden path there. And I have baked into the lecture a story of whatever it is that I think they're going to get wrong. And that's just part of the lecture.
So as I mentioned before, I sometimes would discover that they didn't understand something. And my first question was always, okay, what do we think just happened? Why did somebody who answered A, why did you answer A? And then they would give their spiel. And then somebody who answered B, why did you answer B? And then they would give their spiel. And this is the moment that I mentioned before where sometimes students would say, oh, I know why they got that wrong. They did thing X, or they didn't read thing Y. Or sometimes the students would call the other students out. Well, that was really in the first paragraph of the article, so I don't know how you missed that, right? I mean, and it's very different when it comes from your classmate versus when it comes from the professor, right? So we had moments like that where I would always try to turn it around on them. Okay, well, what do you think happened? Why did you choose that answer? And sometimes the students would also do things like get the textbook out and say, well, and I highlighted this thing, and they would flip to it and say, this is why I thought this was the answer. And those were also funny because, again, sometimes the classmate would say, but did you read to the end of the paragraph where they said this other thing? So I generally then turn the question to the students and say, okay, well, what happened? Why did we think that? Why did you choose that answer? What did we not understand? And try to make it so that they were a little bit more responsible for it. And then again, sometimes I would let them make a case. Okay, well, you know, 40% of you thought it was D. Prove to me why I should accept that as a correct answer for this quiz. And I had a, you know, I felt like I had a couple of budding attorneys in class last time who were, okay, and they would lay out, well, what about this, what about this? And then sometimes their other classmates would chime in. Well, I think if we interpret the word in this way instead of that way. And sometimes I would give it to them not because they were right, but because they were willing to make the argument, even though from my perspective, no, you clearly misunderstood that. But and I usually wouldn't tell them in class. I would say, okay, I'm going to think about what you said, and then I'll let you know next class if I'm going to take your response or not. And, you know, to be totally selfish, I think sometimes I would come back and I would tell them they could have the point, and it made them feel good about me. And there's nothing wrong with the students being a little bit happier with the professor. And so it was a really, I hate to say it like that, a cheap way in terms of it didn't cost me anything. It was just a point of a tiny percentage of their class, but it also fostered some goodwill because they felt like I took their point seriously and that I was willing to be swayed by them and that I, you know, respected what they had to say. So I think those were all positives from addressing the wrong answer and asking them to figure out what was wrong about it.
In the case when I use it for the contests, at the end I just publish the solution. But when I use them to test the understanding of a concept, I usually prepare in advance two ways to explain the same concept. And I always say if 5% of the students got the answer wrong, I re-explain the concept, which is pretty much all the time. So at least 3, 4, 5 students got the answer wrong. So it's a good excuse to explain it all.
Okay, great. Well, let's thank our guests.